Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at paytaxeslater.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
Thank you for joining us this evening. We're talking smart money. I'm Daphne Lapointe along with Jim Lang. Jim is a nationally known IRA, 401k, and Roth IRA conversion expert. He's a CPA, an attorney, and a registered investment advisor. Jim is also the author of the best-selling Retire Secure, with testimonials from Larry King, Charles Schwab, Jane Bryant Quinn, Ed Slott, and 60 other financial professionals. We have a very interesting show this evening featuring our esteemed guest, Michael Lamb, Controller of the City of Pittsburgh. Michael Lamb was elected Controller of the City of Pittsburgh in November of 2007 and took office on January 7, 2008. Prior to being elected City Controller, Michael was the Prothonotary of Allegheny County, the Chief Record Keeper of the Court of Common Pleas. During his years in the Prothonotary's office, Michael helped transform the office from a manual record-keeping office to the most technologically advanced court recording office in the Commonwealth. As Prothonotary, Michael returned millions of dollars in surpluses to Allegheny County taxpayers and reduced the budget of the Prothonotary's office. Michael is an attorney. He received his Juris Doctorate from the Duquesne University, his master's degree from CMU's John Hines School of Public Policy, and his bachelor's degree from Penn State. A lifelong resident of Allegheny County, Michael and his wife Jill reside in Mount Washington. Jim?
I just wanted to mention that I met Michael actually when he was running for mayor. And before I met him, I was actually not supporting him. And then I met with him, and we spoke just privately, just he and I, for about, I'm going to say, like 5 or 6 minutes. And I thought, man, this guy is bright. He's getting my support. And then another time that the next time I really ran into him, I have continuing education requirements as an attorney. And unfortunately, I let it go to the last minute. And I had to get some credits quickly. And I did something that really wasn't relevant, because I really do retirement and estate planning and trusts and estates. Mm-hmm. And the only one thing that I could find in time was actually a courtroom, in effect, education and how to use the recorder of deeds and the Prothonotary, etc. And it so happened that Michael was teaching that. He did a fabulous job. So in addition to his abilities as controllers, I will just tell you that I've had nothing but good experiences with him.
That's great.
But Michael, right now the big issue, literally on the front page of the last couple days headlines, is what's going on with the budget and the potential tax on students. And I thought I would just kind of throw it to you and say, hey, what's going on here, and what should taxpayers be thinking about, and what should we do?
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me. It's a great opportunity just to talk about what's going on in the city and the city's financial situation. You know, we are in an interesting time in the city of Pittsburgh because, as you know, this city has gone through some very difficult fiscal situations over the last 10 years or so. We are now considered an Act 47 distressed city. It's basically a bankrupt situation. And based on that designation, we were able to get some new revenues. We had to make some significant cuts. And we're really beginning to come out of that difficult financial time in a way that is really moving the city forward. We've seen surpluses, budgetary surpluses, for each of the last 5 years. You know, we are bringing in more money than we're costing each year, but we still have very significant long-term legacy costs, pension, and long-term debt that we need to deal with. And we have a situation in this city, as in most cities across Pennsylvania, where because the city is the core of the region, we have an inordinate amount of non-profit or tax-exempt property within the city. And, you know, the property tax is our biggest source of revenue. And when you have close to 40% of your property, which is tax-exempt, it does create a significant problem for the city. So, you know, we've been trying to find creative ways to have the non-profit sector within the city contribute to the city in a more meaningful way. And the mayor's suggestion has been a tax. It's a tax basically on the tuition that charged at local universities, post-secondary schools, and it's a 1% tax on tuition, and it would have raised about $16 million to help fill a budget gap that we have. I have some significant issues with the tax, both from a legal perspective and from a policy perspective, that we can talk about. But basically what happened yesterday was that our oversight board rejected that tax as enforceable and collectible next year. And as a result, now we're sort of back to the drawing board with the budget as to what we should do. And council met today and will continue to meet through the end of the year to try to craft a budget and cobble together a budget that that is balanced and serves the needs of the people of the city of Pittsburgh.
Can I go back for a minute and ask something I've always wanted to ask? What is the impact on individual living in the city that we are bankrupt or an Act 47 city? So...
Well, it starts with, I guess, dealing with the quality of life issues that you deal with in the city of Pittsburgh. Since we went into this status, you look at the changes that we've made. Neighborhood swimming pools, a lot fewer than there used to be. Neighborhood firehouses. We've closed a significant number of firehouses across the city, a number of swimming pools and rec centers, and those things that so many neighborhoods really rely on to add the quality of life in their neighborhood. You know, we've had to close a lot of those kind of facilities to save the money necessary to make our budget every year. The other thing that, though, I guess on the good side is that from the city's perspective is the status allowed us to enact some new taxes and eliminate some nuisance kind of taxes.
Like the business privilege tax.
Exactly, which is probably the biggest example.
And that's a huge nuisance to tax preparers.
Absolutely. I mean, the business privilege tax along with the mercantile tax were taxes on gross revenues. So even in years when you didn't make money, you still paid the tax.
And that's still around for one more year, right?
It was actually eliminated this year.
Oh, it was eliminated. Yeah. That's new.
It was at 6 mils and it was at 4 mils and it's eliminated now. The mercantile tax has been eliminated for the last few years. And in place what we have is a payroll preparation tax, which is 0.55 mils on your payroll.
But that's been around for a while, hasn't it?
It's been around since the Act 47 recommendation in 2004. The advantage to that tax is, first off, it was applied to a much broader category of employers. It didn't include the nonprofit employers, but it did include the banks and the financial services companies and others who didn't pay, in many cases, the business privilege tax.
Well, let me ask you this. UPMC is theoretically a nonprofit organization, and they are, as I understand it, are not paying any real estate taxes.
They pay property taxes if they have buildings that within those buildings there is profit-making activity. So, for example, when you go to Children's Hospital, the restaurant or the gift store there, that does actually generate a profit. There is an assessment of tax for those kind of activities within those buildings. But for the most part, and we're talking probably 90 to 95% of the property that UPMC owns, it is tax-exempt within the city of Pittsburgh.
All right, and as I understand that the... at least what was proposed, is to let those guys alone and then go after the students.
Well, and that is one of the problems I had with the proposal, because if our goal is to extract greater assistance from the large nonprofits, and in my mind that's the universities, the hospitals, and the insurers, you know, Highmark and UPMC insurers, this really let them off the hook. And in many ways, it let the universities off the hook as well, because this tax was just going to be directly tied to the students. So it would have been the students paying this tax. And even the mayor has said it's a tax on students. While it's called the fair share tax, I think it's one of the most unfair taxes I've ever heard of. First off, depending on what school you go to determines how much you would pay. Now, taxation, you think about the local services tax in the city of Pittsburgh, which applies to all commuters in Pittsburgh. $52 a year, everyone who works in the city pays that to the city of Pittsburgh, whether you live here or not. The student tax would have been based on the amount of tuition you pay, so that a student who is at the community college would have paid around $27, where a student at Carnegie Mellon would have paid around $400. Yet their impact on the city is identical. So to me, it's a very unfair tax. You add to that the double taxation that occurs because so many of our students in our post-secondary schools in Pittsburgh have jobs. And so they're already paying, in some cases, a wage tax and in all cases the local services tax, depending on their income. So it just seems to me to be it's not particularly good policy. But the reason for the rejection yesterday wasn't about policy. It was about the legal arguments about the tax and whether or not it can be collected. It seems to be at least that it's speculative whether we could collect it next year.
All right, so whether we like it or not, it's just not going to be a possibility.
Well, the mayor's going to push on. The mayor's going to try. He's probably has the support on council to pass it. It will be met with a legal challenge, and that'll work its way through the court system. But even still, I don't see a situation in which we would collect it next year because that will be a protracted legal fight over whether or not that is a valid tax.
Well, let me ask you this. Sometimes city residents are saying, hey, gee, you know, we're paying 3% of our income, and that's pretty high, where somebody that lives just outside the city who might be making more than we are is paying $52. Hey, what's this? And is there a Pennsylvania constitutional issue about taxing non-residents? Because I know they do in New York City,
right?
And do they in Philadelphia?
There, you know, the local Tax Enabling Act, which is the act that controls these issues in Pennsylvania, does not permit a city of the second class like Pittsburgh to collect a commuter tax, so to speak. So, you know, the one tax that we have the ability to collect is the local services tax, which is capped at $1 a week. So $52 that we can collect. Now we also have parking tax, which is paid by a lot by commuters, but also by city residents. So we do have some of those taxes. But you're right. I mean, we do not have a commuter tax like they have in New York, like they have in Philadelphia. And the only way that's going to change would be for support of our legislators in Harrisburg, which are heavily weighted toward our suburban areas. So less likely that that's going to really happen.
All right. Well, speaking of our suburban areas, I know that there has been a little bit of a push to consolidate some of the city and county services. And as I understand it, both the mayor and Don Honorato are supportive of this type of activity. Can you give me some, let's say, updates in your opinion on consolidating and potentially merging? But I don't know if merging is ever going to happen.
Well, you know,
it
is. It's really a hard proposition. Clearly we live in a county that has 130 municipalities, including the city and all of its suburban communities. And we have a county government as well. So there clearly is need for some effort to coordinate activities, to share services, because we have this very fractious system of government in Allegheny County. The city-county issues, I mean, I've always been, I always believe that when the city and county are doing the same thing, they ought to try to do them together. Mm-hmm. So things that where there are synergies, we really ought to be working together. Tax collection is one area. We both do that. We both have a treasurer that does that. And we made some progress on that just this year because the city and county have consolidated its delinquent tax collection just this year. It'll actually start in January of 2010, consolidating both the city, the school district, the county, and the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority into one collection module that will allow us to collect liens and tax delinquencies from delinquent taxpayers without cost to the city or the county, putting all that cost on the delinquent taxpayer. And we'll both save the city some money and, we think, generate significant revenue for the city.
Well, that makes sense for me, but you don't ever think that there's going to be one wholesale merger, is that right?
I don't see how you get there from where we are right now. I mean, I think the way that will happen, and I think there's a chance that it could happen at some point in the future, but what needs to happen first are the kind of functional consolidations.
Things like police and fire.
Yeah,
and
police, parks.
911.
You know, you have to remember, and 911 we've done. You know, we have a consolidated 911 in Pittsburgh. The thing you need to remember about the city and county is that they don't do a lot of the same things. You know, the city doesn't have a court system. The city doesn't have a jail or a hospital for the elderly. And, you know, the county has those things. So you have to focus on those areas that the city and county are doing the same thing, things like parks and public works and administrative functions like tax collection. And if we can move down that road, then I think there's a better likelihood of a bigger consolidation down the road.
All right. Well, that's good. I mean, I think we all don't want to see money wasted.
Well, there's clearly money to be saved through consolidation. That being said, there are hurdles to that, and significant hurdles. I mean, there are a number of, for instance, the city employees realize a lot of benefits that the county employees don't. And so we have to take that into account as we are working together. We have to take account of the effect that will have on employees, and whether they be basic healthcare related benefits or other benefits that employees have, city and county. We just need to make sure that we're doing right by our employees as well.
Okay, by the way, we forgot to tell people that we are open for calls. Daphne, could you tell listeners how they could call in?
Absolutely. Any callers out there, please, if you have any questions for Jim or for Michael, dial 412-333-9385.
What was that number again, please?
It's 412-333-9385.
Okay, great. All right. Another big issue that that I suspect is very troubling, and it's a national issue. I know that California is grappling with right now, is the pension fund. And as I understand it, we are grossly overfunded, which is underfunded rather, which is probably very, very typical of many private companies, but supposedly isn't supposed to happen in the city. The deal is, if you work for the city, maybe you don't get paid as much, but at least you're going to get a pension when you retire. And now I understand that that is threatened. Could you
the city, and as I said, while we have been performing well on a year-to-year basis, on a cash flow basis, we have significant legacy problems, and pension being the biggest hurdle ahead of us. We have a situation where our pension is among the most underfunded in the country of any municipality. We have it's about $1 billion pension, and we probably have about a third of what we need to pay down those liabilities. So we've got a significant problem there, and we want to be able to assure our employees that there will be a pension for them when they retire. And so we've worked to do a number of things, including contributing more to the pension fund, and the mayor has a plan to deal with parking garages, either selling those garages and taking the proceeds and putting them into the pension fund, or maybe even a direct grant of the garages into the pension fund, in one way to pump up that pension fund and then have a new revenue source for it moving forward. It's the biggest financial hurdle that the city has ahead of it.
Well, isn't that really just taking money from the right pocket and putting it into the left pocket, and just juggling around as opposed to new sources of revenue? I mean, even presumably, if you sell the parking lots, you're giving up, or even you sell the water sewage facilities, you're giving up a future stream of income.
You are, and I guess the difference, I guess, with the parking lots is that if you were to sell the parking lots, or as discussed, is lease the parking lots, you'd still realize the revenue of the tax, which is significant. I mean, the tax right now is 37.5%. Under this scenario, it would actually go to 40%. And the likelihood is that tax rates would go up, so you would realize a bigger bump moving forward from the tax. The other thing that you'd have, though, is you'd have likely something north of $200 million that you could pump into the pension fund and get you back to a more solid footing. And then the plan would kick in that you would pay beyond just your minimum obligation to the pension fund every year. You'd pay an additional $5 or $10 million each year that you'd be able to do, particularly in the out years, and you could bring the fund to its full solvency.
All right, and I guess the issue there is, do you think that what I would be afraid of, and I have the same fear for the Turnpike, is we would be giving up an excellent long-term revenue source for way less than it might be worth, and can we trust the people in charge to negotiate a fair deal?
Yeah, and that's really the issue. That's exactly the issue, because we've got this proposal that's out there right now, we shouldn't just walk away from the idea of not selling the asset and just using the revenue from the asset to pour into the pension fund. I mean, that would work as well. So we need to keep that in mind. And as the proposals come in, the one thing that's good, it appears that there's significant interest in this proposal. So we have a lot of interest. That should keep us keep us honest, so to speak. So that there's a lot of interest in, and hopefully a lot of funding behind that interest. But we should never lose sight of the fact that one solution to this is to not sell them at all, and to use the revenue and pump it into the system.
Okay, and I guess the conflict there is, do we trust the government, so to speak, to get a fair price? But then presumably, if we did, then presumably, if you do believe in the free market system and you believe that the small business owner is going to be more efficient than government, then presumably he can make some money and you can tax that.
That's right. And the way you keep it, you know, the way you trust the government in this situation is you have a competitive bid. You know, we've got a competitive bid situation where RFPs are out there, and when they come back, we look at the best deal. And right now, I know there are at least 10 different organizations who have expressed interest in bidding on this proposal. So hopefully, we can get a good price for the city. And as I said, if not, the other option is just you hold on to the asset and you direct the revenues from the asset right into the pension fund. So we have options, and we just need to commit to do them.
And who's really the decision maker? I know you're the controller, and then you have Luke as the mayor,
right?
And then there's council, and I would imagine there's a bunch of committees.
It's a pretty good mix of people on this proposal, because first and foremost, the decision maker on most of the stuff is the mayor. I mean, he's the chief executive of this city. He is has the power to appoint the members of the parking authority who will be critical to this decision. He controls a number of the votes on the pension fund as well. I serve as a member of the comprehensive pension fund along with the mayor and the president of council and representatives of the various unions. So all of those have a role, but clearly the biggest vote in the room is the mayor.
All right, and I guess, I mean, frankly, from my perspective, you have both a legal background, a financial background, where the mayor, frankly, does not.
You know, the mayor. The mayor is.
Maybe he's learning quickly on the job.
Well, he has now been in office he's been the mayor for the last 2 years, but was on council for a couple years before that. He's been a pretty quick study, and particularly on the pension issue. You know, this summer, when there was a bill introduced in Harrisburg to basically take over, have a state take over the city's pension fund, I sat with him on a number of those meetings. We put forth a plan to keep that from happening, and because frankly, the plan that the state had recommended would have required significant contribution from the city and significant additional cost to the city. And the mayor crafted a plan to delay that takeover, give us a chance to try to get this thing back on the right footing. And he did a pretty good job. And I have to say, he had a very good understanding of what we were doing and made some very good decisions.
All right. Well, that's that is somewhat reassuring to hear. The other thing that I know that you have been involved with is something that I think that you call Connect, that is, let's say, part of your openness.
Yeah, Connect is an interesting organization. We talked about the need for greater coordination of all the various levels of government in Allegheny County. Connect is an acronym for the Congress of Neighboring Communities. And it's basically made up of the city of Pittsburgh and all of those communities that share a common border with the city of Pittsburgh. It's 36 communities in whole, and it takes in places like Scott Township and Ross Township and McKees Rocks and all those neighborhoods, those municipalities outside the city that share a common border. And the goal of Connect is to focus on issues. To focus on issues of mutual interest to the city and really bring the core communities of the region together, because they represent a big chunk of the population of this region, but also a large number of the jobs of this region. And we do share a lot of common interests, so it's a forum for us to really work together.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. Thank you. This has been very interesting.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
We are back with Jim Lang and our special guest, Michael Lamb, Controller, City of Pittsburgh. Callers, we welcome any of your questions. Please call 412-333-9385.
Okay, Michael, you said that you had a few more things to talk about with Connect, and I want to finish that up, and then I'm going to ask you a tax question.
All right. Well, let me just say that, you know, the Congress of Neighboring Communities, you know, a couple of the issues that they're focused on that are really apply to any of these communities within the core of our region are the significant water and sewer issues that we face and mass transit issues that we face. You know, we are looking at, you know, all these communities are members of the Alcosan sanitation system. And we did an audit earlier this year with the county controller, Mark Flaherty, looking at Alcosan and the costs associated with the consent decree that they are now under with respect to wet weather improvements. And, you know, it's over the next 20 years, it's about a $20 billion price tag. There's a lot of need for renewed or new infrastructure within our water and sewer system. And that's just at Alcosan. That's not counting all the various municipal needs that that our water systems have. So we've got some significant issues ahead of us, and we're trying to work together to get through them.
This sounds a little bit like the federal government. And I don't know if they can increase the taxes of Pittsburgh anymore. By the way, that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big Roth IRA conversion advocate, because I think taxes are going up, and I'm very interested in helping people hold their taxes and getting tax-free growth in the future. But mm-hmm. I have a tax question. This is that, you know, we are still a CPA firm. We're also a law firm and a registered investment advisory firm. But one of the things that has always bothered me is I like people that get extensions because it kind of spreads out our workload a little bit. And, you know, for a federal extension, there's an appropriate form, and you estimate how much you think you're going to pay, and you pay it. And the same with Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh doesn't have an extension. So I think what we're doing right now is we're just filing a return, not even putting in a lot of details, and then later on we file an amended return that has the real numbers. That doesn't feel very comfortable to me, and a lot of clients say, wait, you're just guessing at what the profit is, and this is a real return. This isn't an extension. Can you help me out if there's going to be any change, if there's something that we should be doing differently, or how you would handle a situation where somebody is getting an extension? Now, sometimes Pittsburgh taxation is relatively simple. You're taxing wages, you're taxing profits from businesses, mm-hmm. but you're not taxing interest, you're not taxing dividends, you're not taxing IRA distributions, which, by the way, thank you for that, Michael, because Pittsburgh is actually a good town to retire in because your IRA distributions and your pension is not taxable for the city.
Right.
And by the way, let's keep it that way, if you would.
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, in the city of Pittsburgh, it's an earned income tax. So it is on earned income. And it's, you know, the question of extensions has come up to me before. And I'm not the tax collector. I'm not the treasurer. But I have, you know, it's an interesting issue. I think one of the reasons that it really hasn't been addressed is just what you said. It's a relatively simple calculation and form. I mean, it's a 3% tax. It's a 1.5% to the city. It's 1.5% to the school district, and so it's a relatively simple tax for most taxpayers. But you're right,
unless you have a business.
Well, that's right. And when you have your own business, it gets more complicated. You know, it's a good point. It's something that we need to discuss, obviously, with the city treasurer to see what we can do. When we do it with respect to property taxes, which, as I said, is the biggest revenue source for the city of Pittsburgh, you know, we do have a number of payment plan, hardship plans, you know, to deal with that. But on the earned income side, we really haven't addressed it yet.
All right. Well, you mentioned another big issue, property taxes.
Yeah.
And I personally, the way I think, at least in terms of income taxes, is I think whatever income tax laws are going to be out there, that they should be enforced and people should pay the taxes according to what the law is, and that the enforcement should be good. And my gut instinct is the same with the city, is that presumably we should have a fair taxation system, and if we are going to have a property tax, and some people might not agree with that idea, that it should be based on a good assessment of the property.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's a critical issue in the city of Pittsburgh, and it is probably the biggest issue on which Dan Onorato and I disagree. Because if we are going to have a system that taxes real property, you have to have a system that fairly values that property. It just doesn't work without that. And what's happened in the county is, for all intents and purposes, is a freeze. We basically have frozen values in place, and this is a very diverse county. It's a very diverse city. And so we have many neighborhoods where property values go up at a very high rate. We have neighborhoods that stay pretty stable. We have neighborhoods that are actually on decline. And so what ends up happening is you have neighborhoods that are assessed at 100% or more than their value. You have neighborhoods that where homes are assessed at a quarter of their value. It's just not a fair system of taxation, and we need to have regular assessments. You know, I look at property assessments, it's kind of like a train that's rolling down the tracks. You never quite get to perfect market value, but you can't stop running. You got to keep moving and trying to get to that, to get to fair assessments. And we're not doing it right now in Allegheny County. And that's why we've had a lawsuit that has challenged the fairness of that tax. And that's why Judge Wettick has ordered a new reassessment across Allegheny County.
Well, doesn't he keep doing this every couple of years and then not a whole lot happens?
Well, what happened was he did it. He required it back in the late 90s. We did do an assessment. We did one in the early part of 2000. We did another one a couple years later, and there was a lot of outrage about it and people complaining about the values that they saw. But that's why we have an appeal process. You know, what Judge Wettick has recommended now, which I think is fair, let's assess a quarter of the county every year, and every 4 years then your area would be assessed. And by doing that, you could assess properties, and then you could have an appeal process, and we would always be improving. We'd never be perfect, but at least we would be taking into account the fluctuations that you see from neighborhood to neighborhood in the real estate market.
Well, I guess what Dan is worried about is he is worried about significant tax increases for people whose property goes up. And maybe if you legislate certain limitations, that might be a way to do it.
And that is the way to do it. And what you've seen in a lot of communities and in a lot of school districts are anti-windfall provisions, so that when a community has a reassessment and that assessment results in new revenues of more than, say, 3 or 5%, that the governing body, whether it be a school district or a council, would then be required to reduce millage to offset that increase. Now, you're never going to be able to do it for individual properties, but you could do it for communities, and it has worked.
Well, that seems more fair, because I think what happens if people perceive that what is going on isn't fair, they will do everything they can to avoid, or I don't want to use the word evade, but...
We've talked about that in a number of instances tonight. I mean, we need people to pay their fair share, and whether that is, the nonprofit community, whether that is, this, as the mayor has called, the fair share tax, or now property tax, you're right. I mean, I think if people can understand and respect that, you know, no one likes to pay taxes. I don't like to pay them, and no one does. But when I know that tax is fairly assessed, I certainly feel better about paying it.
And I come from a slightly different background and orientation. My goal, frankly, is to take the tax laws as they are, and I'm really speaking more about federal tax laws, and help people organize their finances in a way as to reduce taxes and let the other poor schmoes pay the tax. And my clients, people taking my advice, so for example with the Roth IRA conversion, having tax-free income for the next 50, 70 years. But I guess that's not your problem.
Well, you know what? It's funny, my father was a long time estate lawyer, and the little bit of law practice that I continue is in the estate field. And you're right. I mean, the goal is to limit your client's exposure to taxes, and there are a lot of techniques to do that, and people need to be made aware of them.
Right, like Judge Leonard Hand said. It is not a duty to pay the most taxes. In fact, it's not even patriotic, and you have every right to arrange your affairs to pay the least possible taxes. That's let's say, my hero in the area of tax philosophy.
You know, well, except for the city, you should pay whatever you can. So. But you know, the city, like I said, the city taxes. You know, our tax situation has improved dramatically over the last few years. I think just with elimination of some of the nuisance taxes. With I really think, as you said, the city of Pittsburgh is a phenomenal place to retire. Because we do have an earned income tax. But it's also a great place to start a business. We've eliminated a lot of those nuisance business taxes, and it really has become a much better place to do business than it was even 5 or 6 years ago.
Right, but even a business, let's say that I live in Monroeville, and I start a business in Pittsburgh, and I make a lot of money, all right? Pittsburgh still isn't getting a chunk of that.
That's right, because you're paying your wage tax to your home municipality. What the city is realizing is any of the business taxes that you generate, the payroll preparation tax, and then, of course, the $52. But, it's interesting when in this whole discussion about the tax on tuition. Councilman Peduto made a statement yesterday that is really true. It's hard to believe that under this tax scenario, the president of any of the universities will be paying less tax than the students who are attending the schools.
Oh,
you know, so that really tells you something about the fairness or lack thereof of this tax.
Well, yeah, I like the idea of taxing some non-residents, and probably some of the people from the outlying counties are screaming and yelling and saying, "Miss Kai Lang, what's up with this guy?" And I'm not going to ask you to go that far out. Let me ask you this: the new mantra these days is full disclosure, openness, transparency. And Pittsburgh is doing something, and specifically your office is doing something about that.
Yeah, we started an initiative, something we wanted to do when I first got into office, and we finally have it up and running. It's the beginning of what we think can be something very special in Pittsburgh. It's called Open Book Pittsburgh. It's a website that's been set up through our office, which basically has taken the database of every city contract. So every city contract is online right now. You can go on and see, what companies are getting contracts, what the contract is for. In the long run, you'll be able to actually go on and click on and actually read the contract itself. But we still need to get some space on the city's mainframe to do that. But we're prepared to do that. We also have on there all of the political contributions, because there's always a lot of question about who's getting contracts, and are they getting contracts because they've contributed to candidates?
Okay. Right.
And so this kind of opens up that process. So you can go online right now and open Book Pittsburgh and see every contributor who's given to any candidate in the city, and the individual candidates. You can look at every one of their contributors. Oh. So you can see that, and then you can match that up with the various contracts and really find out for yourself, if you trust what's going on.
How does the city assess bids if price isn't the only issue? So let's say, for discussion's sake, you need a repair of a road, all right? And you have the ABC Shyster Company that doesn't have a great reputation, and the roads have to be redone every couple years. That comes in with a lower bid than Mr. Reputable Road Repair.
Well, the city follows the state law and guidelines on this, and that it's what is required is that contracts, like that kind of a contract, be awarded to your lowest responsible bidder. So we go out to bid on those kind of projects. We tend to deal with a lot of the same companies. There are a lot of local companies that do very good work on those kind of projects, and we'll go out to bid and receive the bids in, and the bid is then offered to the lowest responsible bidder. Now that responsibility, or the responsible part of that is, we look to make sure they're bonded and to make sure their reputation is what they say it is. And the city has had pretty good success there. Where the city has more of a problem are on those kind of contracts where they're not required to take the lowest responsible bidder. Things like professional services, hiring lawyers, hiring architects, hiring consultants. And so we've really try to, when we're doing that kind of work, really try to enforce the same kind of policies as we do on the lowest responsible bidder. You know, let's have a very vigorous RFP process that we try to get the best information from all the various vendors who want to do whatever kind of work it is. Even with Open Book Pittsburgh, we created that with an outside vendor. A small tech company here in Pittsburgh was the successful bidder. But we sent RFPs out to about, you know, every company we could think of. We ended up getting about 7 or 8 responses back, and from that we winnowed that down to a couple companies and interviewed them both, and then picked the company that we chose to do the system, and we're very happy with it. But it's really about having a process. And where the city gets into trouble, where the URA and some of the authorities get into trouble, is when they stray from process. And we've seen that in some contracting in the city and in some of our authorities in the past. And when they stick to a basic process that's open and transparent and follows the guidelines that have been set out, we do pretty well.
Well, I see that for, let's say, for roads, and then you say, well, there's some other, let's say, legal services or things where there might be some intellectual activity. I know in my area, in the area of retirement and estate planning, one piece of advice can save people thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands, in the long run millions of dollars, and maybe the cost of that is pretty insignificant. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's the same thing where the quality of the advice that the city might be getting, where if you had, let's say, a responsible attorney who's okay, and he's at, say, $175 an hour, but then there's this whiz-bang guy for $475, and the advice is going to save millions and millions of dollars. Is there any, I mean, in the private sector, people kind of work that out themselves. If they're being responsible, what they're doing is they're reading articles and books and listening to programs and listening to even, for example, the archives of this program that has just, I think, tremendous intellectual property or intellectual content. Is there any way that the city can assess that? In other words, distinguish between responsible and wonderful?
Yeah, I think, you know, we try to invoke best practices in everything that the city's doing. Part of my job as controller is to go out into the various departments, observe their practices, and make recommendations for improving their practices. What are best practices in the various fields that they are operating in? And we've done a couple of audits just looking at contract processes and what policies are in place to make sure that you're getting the right expertise at the right price. The Government Finance Officers Association of America has put out a number of best practices, you know, just for contracting. And so we try to follow those and try to encourage all the departments and all the authorities in the city to follow those as well.
Well, I'll tell you this. If I'm a listener and I'm hearing some pretty smart things coming from your mouth and saying, well, he's on top of some of the procedures in order that the city is hiring services, I would be feeling a lot better than I might have an hour ago.
Yeah, well, I you know, like I said,
except when you told us that we're going broke.
Yeah,
in fact, we are broke.
You know, it's interesting that the city is, again, it's in a very interesting situation because we are doing very well year to year, but we've got these long term problems that we need to deal with.
We'll be right back.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Welcome back. We're delighted to have you with us this evening in the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Our special guest this evening has been Michael Lamb, Controller of the City of Pittsburgh. And listeners, if you have any questions, your time's running out, please call as soon as you can, 412-333-9385. Jim?
Michael, let's say you're a city resident and you're hearing what is going on and sewage liabilities are in the billions. Pension liability is in the billions. Let's say you're working and paying taxes, or even if you're retired, what's going to happen to Pittsburgh?
Well, you know, it's it's an interesting question because we've got, while we have significant hurdles ahead of us, I think we are charting the right course right now. A number of things are falling into place with, you know, frankly, some significant fiscal controls that we've had put in place by both our oversight board and the distressed status designation, and really the mayor and council sort of holding the line on a number of things. You know, we have a situation right now where, you know, we've got about a $450 million budget. About 20% of that budget goes to debt service every year. It's and that's going to continue at least until 2018 before we see a significant drop in that debt service payment. And the good news is, though, that we've been able, because of the new taxes and the holding the line on some expenditures, we've been able to generate surpluses each year that have enabled us to not borrow new money. So we haven't gone to market for new money since 2006. We continue to pay down our debt. When I first started in office, you know, our debt was around $900 million. We're down to closer to $600 million and paying that down significantly every year. So there is an opportunity for us, if we can continue on the course that we're on, to get to, say, 5 years from now or 6 years from now and really begin to realize a benefit of having a much more a stronger or more sound budget that is not so or is not paying so much toward debt service. You know, we've got we're doing something that maybe you as an accountant wouldn't like, and that is that we're paying capital costs as you go. So rather than, you know, when we're building a bridge, we're paying for that bridge with today's dollars rather than paying for that out over the 40-year lifespan of that bridge. And that's not good accounting practice, but it is the situation that we're in right now in the city. And we've been able to make it work at least for the last 4 or 5 years. And if we can continue to do that, while it might not be the smartest fiscal advice that we could give, it certainly is allowing us to get our debt under control.
But when you say debt, you're talking about money that we owe right now.
Right.
All right. Now, see, what I'm worried about is things like the future pension liability and the future sewage liability. And you know, so when you say, hey, we're paying some of our debt down, I'm thinking, well, that's great. You know, we're going one step forward, but we're really taking 20 steps back because the sewage and pension and other issues. The other thing is issues that we haven't even faced, you know, any kind of catastrophe, fire, flood, you know, terrorist event, anything that we haven't even. So we're in hot water, sounds like, even without any of that stuff.
Yeah, we really are. But I think what you need to remember is that while the pension issue, and it's the biggest issue that we face. There's no question about it. You know, it's a $1 billion problem, and we've got about $300 million to handle it. So we've got at least a $700 million liability there. But it's the kind of thing that it's not coming due today, and we are taking steps to deal with it. If we're successful in doing any of the projected proposals with respect to parking, and we can get that, you know, that could bring us up to being, you know, to around $500 million. The market has significantly turned around since March, as you know, and we've realized a significant benefit from that. So we're getting there. We're never going to invest our way out of this problem. It's going to require a couple of things. First, it's going to require us to put more into it, but it's also going to require us to hold our employees to fewer benefits in the out years. I mean, we've got a number of our employees, particularly our public safety personnel, who are getting lifetime health care. And that's expensive, and we've got at some point to cap that number and seek increased contributions from them as we move forward. We can't extend benefits, and that's you know, that if we can keep from extending additional benefits and keep the state from extending benefits for us, which happens sometimes as well, we can dig out from under this, but it's going to take a long time.
Well, I salute you for your optimism. I hope it is well founded, and frankly, I'm glad you're on the job. You know, we've mentioned sewage. Obviously, the school districts are a major cause. Can you tell us kind of what we're getting in terms of, you know, fire, sewage, police? Where do our city tax dollars go?
Well, you know, when it's interesting you mentioned the school district, because I am the only elected official that represents both the city and the school district. I'm the controller for the school district as well. And when you're paying your city taxes,
you're talking about the Pittsburgh school district.
I'm talking about the Pittsburgh school district,
not the outline.
Right. And the Pittsburgh school district, and in the Pittsburgh school district, you know, we've got, we have a new, relatively new superintendent who has really made significant change to that district, held the line on costs, and has really shown that you can have dramatic improvement in student achievement in an urban school district. He's really to be commended for what's going on in the Pittsburgh schools. It's not always been easy. We've had school closings. We are a shrinking district. But the Pittsburgh Public Schools have been able to really right the ship with respect to student achievement, and really begun to close the racial achievement gap in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. So when you see what are we getting for that, I mean, while you're paying a 3% wage tax, half of that is going to the school district, along with a significant property tax. But you're seeing that the school district is producing citizens who are ready to compete in the global economy as they come out of high school, which says a lot about what can be done in an urban district like Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I think the Pittsburgh Promise is probably helping that.
I think it is. It's going to be interesting to see if the Pittsburgh Promise really holds the promise that has been expected, and that you start to see a reversal of the population trends in Pittsburgh, because that's really what it comes down to. When it comes down to the tax burden in the city of Pittsburgh, it's mainly on the people who live in the city and the people who own property here. And so if we can't reverse that population decline, we're going to have problems dealing with our fiscal future.
Well, has the city not already lost a lot of people?
We've lost, we've lost more than half our population since 1960.
All right. Is that within the same geographical boundaries?
Yes. Yeah. The city of Pittsburgh has not changed its geographic boundaries since it merged with, I think, Carrick in the 1930s. We're still a 58-square-mile city. And when you look around the country and see cities that have grown, most of them have grown because they have annexed neighboring communities. And we in Pennsylvania have been unable to do that.
But on the other hand... Okay, I think we're going to have to wrap up soon.
Okay, all right. Well, this has been really wonderful. This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Jim and I would like to thank our special guest, the uber impressive. You like that?
Yeah, thank you.
Michael Lamb, controller of the city of Pittsburgh. Michael, it really, truly has been a pleasure.
No, thank you. It's been great for me to be here.
I think you did a great job. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we wish you all the best for continued success of all these very important initiatives. And tune in again on Wednesday, December 2nd at 7 p.m. here on KQV for our next show featuring Jane Bryant Quinn.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at retiresecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at retiresecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.